proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus Patrick. Mr. Clark.
Good morning.
Good morning, judges. My name is Robert Clark, and I represent Ulander Patrick on this appeal. I suppose our theory or our theme here is that less deference to a policy statement is not zero, to borrow from an opinion of this court, United States versus Henderson. After the decision of United States versus Booker, the courts established a regime of sentencing which emphasized that sentencing courts had to take into consideration the 3553A factors in deciding a reasonable sentence for someone. And indeed, the statute here requires a district court judge to refer to Chapter 7 of the guidelines of the policy statement with respect to what those guidelines, for want of a better word, under the policy statement are in sentencing someone in a reasonable manner.
Was this argument ever made in the district court?
No, it was not.
The United States, of course, says in its brief that the standard, therefore, is plain error. Your brief doesn't attempt to argue plain error. Your brief seems to use some kind of de novo review standard. Don't you have a problem? You
Judge,
didn't file a reply brief.
It is. Let me argue that it is. And I'm going to argue that it is plain error in the following way.
Why didn't you make that argument in your brief?
I missed it, Judge.
Then why didn't you file a reply brief?
I should have. The plain error doctrine involves an error that's clear, and this is clearly an error to not refer to the guideline ranges. It's clear and it's plain, and it involves the substantial rights of the individual in this case. Because referring to the guideline range,
well, it's really not a guideline range.
It's a policy
statement.
Range. But the statute indicates, 3553 indicates that the policy has to be taken into consideration, and that policy does give a range of months. And in order to satisfy due process requirements, this court should have used and referred to the range of months that are in the policy statement. And if in Rita, the court said that using either the guideline or a policy statement with respect to the number of months involved assures that all of the 3553 issues and characteristics will be roughly applied in a particular sentence. And in this case, they were not. And the substance of the sentence in this case proves that they were not. In this case, there was no mention whatsoever of the guideline or the policy statement length of months. And then the court went on to narrowly focus on one aspect of 3553A, which was deterrence and punishing the individual in this situation. The court did not take up the arguments of counsel with respect to his employment. The court never even alluded to the fact that the employment involved here prevented him from satisfying the requirement of finishing his community service in the of 60 hours before May 31st. In addition, the court never commented on any of these arguments whatsoever. So not only did the court ignore the range under the policy statement, the court ignored the arguments of counsel with respect to why, in this case, in terms of this case, this man might not have been able to live up to the order of February 2013 with respect to completing the hours under the order, the 60 hours that he had accumulated. And the court never commented on any of the other 3553 characteristics of the defendant in this case either. The fact that he had been employed, the fact that the probation department said over and over again that he was struggling, that he had completed his drug school, nothing like that was referred to. The court simply ignored all of that that argument. Nor did the court, and I don't know how, nor can the court really review here what the district court was thinking when the district court gave a sentence that was substantially higher than the policy months, the 3 to 6, 9 months that the court finally imposed, which was 12 months. By the way, 12 months was imposed, which was 12 times the amount that the government attorney asked for during the hearing, a hearing which was 5 pages long back in June of 2013. At first, the U.S. attorney stood up and said, well, how about 120 days in the Salvation Army? The probation office said, no, that cannot be. It must be some straight time. Then the government asked for 30 days, 12 times the amount. Now, if the court sentencing this man had the guidelines before it and was thinking about it, the court might have given some good reasons why it gave a longer sentence.
The court did not have the special report that refers to 3 to 9 months, didn't it?
It did have the special report, but to borrow another insight from an opinion of this court, what the court knows, the court may not have in its mind when it's going through one of these sentencing processes. And that's why the rules under Gall and Rita are that they be made explicit. And Henderson, I believe that statement came from, that you don't know what the court really knows simply because it's in some sort of a report to the court. If the court, on the other hand, had fulfilled the procedural steps set out, the court would have addressed such a thing. And to the question of plain error, Your Honor, I believe plain error is involved here because there's substantial rights here. There is a regimen, a setup of a procedure for sentencing people under Gall and Rita, which was not abided by here and which involved the substantial rights of the defendant, and asked this court to reverse his sentence on that basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. Chapman.
May it please the court. The district court did not plainly err in any of the ways asserted by the defendant in this appeal. The record in this case more than adequately demonstrates that the district court not only considered the sentencing factors of 3553A, but that he also adequately explained his reasons for imposing the 12-month sentence. Of course, the amount of explanation that the district court had to give depends, in the first instance, on the circumstances of the case. And in this case, at the time of sentencing, after the district court revoked the defendant's supervised release, he had before him a fully developed record which demonstrated that the defendant had committed a relatively simple but serious violation of supervised release. Namely, he repeatedly refused to perform the community service that he was obligated to do under the court's sentence. The defendant had been told multiple times by the district court in open court that he had to comply with the terms of a supervised release and that he had to do his community service in particular. The probation officer repeatedly told the defendant to get started on his community service, and he simply failed to do so. So we come to late February 2013, and the district court found that the defendant essentially failed to act in good faith by failing to do his community service. But even at that point, the district court, showing restraint, gave the defendant 3 more months to perform his 60 hours of community service. So there was no rush to judgment by the court. There was no desire just to throw the book at Mr. Patrick and get him out of the courtroom. That's not at all what happened here. The district court gave him an additional 3 months and said, by May 31st of 2013, you will finish all 60 hours. And he told the defendant he was serious, and the defendant later acknowledged that he knew that the district court was serious. And the defendant simply did none of it. He simply did none of it. And importantly, when the district court asked both the defendant and his counsel to give an explanation for why he didn't do any of that community service, neither one of them was able to offer any legitimate explanation for why he couldn't have done his community service. There was no finding that his employment somehow prohibited him from doing it. He had a full-time job, but that started in March, and there's no explanation as to why he couldn't have done his community service while he was not working. So the violation before the court was very straightforward, and the defendant's recalcitrance and his stubbornness in refusing to do what he was obligated to do were 100% clear by the time we get to sentencing. So it's in the context of those facts that the district court explained why he gave the 12-month sentence. And we simply disagree with the defendant. Contrary to their claims, the record does demonstrate that Judge Grady considered the 3553A factors. He didn't take them off.
Mr. Chapman, you'd agree there is no reference to the guidelines.
That's correct, Judge. To the policy statement range under 7B1.4, that's correct, Judge.
Would you suggest our case law in recent years would point the other to another conclusion?
I think they do, Judge, especially in the Robertson case from 2011, suggested that post-Booker, the 7B1.4 policy statement is to be given even less importance that it had been given pre-Booker, where I think there's some case law suggesting that it should be given some level of great weight, I think was the term pre-Booker that bled over post-Booker. But Robertson is the most recent statement.
How do you separate this case from Robertson?
I think in Robertson, there was a lot less on the record. And I think the way I would separate it is, in Robertson, you had an individual who was growing marijuana, went to jail for a lengthy period of time, came out and was caught growing marijuana again. And the district court really only made a couple of comments, a couple of which were basically sarcastic remarks that he should have been growing, you know, some other kind of flowers or roses instead of marijuana. Judge Grady in this case did something very different. He gave the defendant a chance to make whatever mitigating arguments he could make, and he stated very carefully that he wanted to impose a significant sentence because he wanted to drive home the point to the defendant and generally that the obligation to comply with supervised release is important. So those are statements that demonstrate that Judge Grady was trying to carve out a sentence that reflected the need for specific deterrence and general deterrence and to promote respect for law. The defendant's characteristics were repeatedly discussed where they talked about the recalcitrance and Judge Grady showing his frustration. At one point asked the defendant, why didn't you even do a little bit of it? Like basically saying, what is the matter with you? And the defendant really had no answer other than to say, well, I'll do it in the future. But that was the same promise he'd been given before from the defendant. And so I think it's clear he just simply didn't believe him. So unlike the district court in the Robertson case, which was a very quick proceeding, I think Judge Grady, over the course of all of these hearings, especially at sentencing, definitely demonstrates that he cares about making sure that the sentence is crafted in a way that it really effectuates the 3553A factors. And so I think the bottom line is, given the nature of the violation, there is a record here that's suitable for reasonableness review. We're only here on the procedural error claim, but the record is suitable for reasonableness review. And with regard to the fact that he didn't specifically mention the 7B1.4 policy statement range, you have the Petrie case from 2007 where another district court did not at all mention the 7B1.4 range. That involved a defendant who was repeatedly testing positive for the use of drugs while on supervised release. The district court sentenced that individual to twice the high end of the range. It was 3 to 9 months, as in this case, and that individual received an 18-month sentence. There was no mention at all of 7B1.4 or the advisory range, but this court affirmed the judgment on the basis that, looking at the record as a whole, the district court considered the relevant sentencing factors and had done its job. And we would submit that's exactly what Judge Grady did. in this case. The test isn't whether he happened to mention 7B1.4. The test is whether the concerns that motivate a range under 7B1.4 and the other sentencing factors as a whole are reflected in the record, and we think that's clearly the case. So for all those reasons, we would ask that the judgment the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Mr. Clark?
It is our position that the error in this case is more egregious than the one in Robertson. Not mentioning the guideline range, the policy range of 3 to 9 months, is because mentioning that by a judge anchors the whole process of sentencing someone. That's why Gall says the first thing in a reviewing court does is decide whether or not the sentencing court calculated the guideline range, or in this case, calculated the range.
Counsel, the problem is there is no guideline range for supervised release. There are only policy statements. We've held that policy statements can be ignored after Booker. Now, what you might properly be relying on is not Gall or guidelines, but 18 U.S.C. 3663A4B, which separately provides that district judges have to consider policy statements when dealing with revocations of supervised release. I respect an argument along those lines, but it has nothing to do with Gall and nothing to do with the guidelines.
I thought I mentioned that earlier, that they're part of the statute requires the sentencing court to refer to...
No, it does not. It says the sentencing court must consider.
Consider.
It does not say the sentencing court must discuss. That may be added by circuit precedent, but the statute says consider.
And there's no evidence whatsoever that that range under the policy statement was considered in this case. There's nothing on the record that the court considered that range which the policy statement contains.
What you're asking us to adopt is a presumption of error, that a district judge who doesn't demonstrate compliance with a statute must have violated the statute. We don't normally adopt a presumption of error for the behavior of district judges.
I am asking the court to adopt the notion that what the court, sentencing court, may know is really not on its mind when it's sentencing. And that's what this court said in Robertson when it reversed the sentence in Robertson. Thank you.
Thank you all, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.